October 25th, 2019, BIHE Vrindavan, Study in Canto 6, Chapter 18, Text 56 to 78. So to summarize this, Lord Indra, understanding that Diti had plans to kill him, very closely observed her behavior and waited for an opportune moment to foil her plans and thus save his own life. One night after taking dinner, Diti forgot to wash her hands, mouth, and feet before she lay down to take rest. In that state, Indra was able to enter her womb, and he attempted to destroy the womb by cutting the children into seven pieces, the child. When the seven pieces began to cry, he cut each of those into seven pieces again. And the 49 pieces all pleaded with Indra to not kill them, who were like his brother. Thus Indra realized that the embryos were not his enemies at all, and told him not to fear, for he would cause them no further harm. Upon awakening, Diti saw her 49 sons along with Indra, and she was happy to see them all. She explained that she was undergoing an austerity to have Indra killed, but in the process of performing the Vaishnava process, she lost her enmity. Indra admitted that he tried to destroy her embryo, but due to her devotional service, the child was saved. Diti thus forgave him. So this section is about how bhakti purifies wicked, selfish, evil desires. So Diti is trying to kill Indra, and Indra is trying to kill Diti's child. We have two people here who are desiring to commit murder. Of the two of them, who do you think has the better moral position?
Well, Indra was defending himself.
Yes, Indra. Because Indra is defending against an attack on himself, whereas Diti is looking for
vengeance.
Diti is looking for revenge. Although you remember how she covers it very nicely, right? She says Indra is just a sense gratifier, right? She criticizes Indra. So she rationalizes it. But she's just looking, that's right. We need it, we'll get that. She's just looking for revenge, and Indra is looking for self-preservation. So Indra's moral position is better. But does Indra have a good moral position? No. His position is very much like Diti, but also like what other personality in the Bhagavatam?
Aswatthama?
Well, Aswatthama, nobody was trying to kill him. But like Aswatthama, in that Aswatthama wanted to kill a child in the womb, and in fact, this was brought up by Sukadeva, just like Aswatthama tried to kill you in the womb, but God saved you. So in a similar way, Indra tried to kill these children, this child in the womb, and the Lord saved the child. But who else wanted to kill a child because the child was a threat to him?
Kamsa.
So Kamsa was told, this child will kill you, so he wants to kill the child. So Indra is hearing. It wouldn't be hard for Indra to hear, because Diti is his
aunt
and his
stepmother.
It's his family. Can you imagine? This is a pretty dysfunctional family here. So if you imagine that, you know, you hear, maybe he heard it from his father. His father might have actually told him, because did his father want the child to kill Indra? Did Kasyapa want this child to kill Indra?
No.
No, not at all. So we don't know, but it's entirely possible that Indra's father, Kasyapa, informed him, just by the way, your stepmother and aunt are taking this procedure and to produce a child who will kill you. Alright, so just like Diti was devious with Kasyapa, Indra is devious with Diti. You would think that she would realize. You'd think.
Maybe she did.
Maybe she did. Now, interesting, you were asking me how we preach about Prabhupada's statements about women. Is Indra now guilty of the same thing? He's a man. That he's appearing very pleasant, but actually he's devious. So the Bhagavatam shows that when people are selfish, they do nasty things, whether they're men or women. Doesn't really matter. Indra is doing pretty much exactly the same thing. It says, like a hunter dresses like a deer. So we don't see that much, but we do have a saying in English. What would be the saying in English? Instead of a hunter in deer's clothing, we would call it a wolf in sheep's clothing. So we have the saying, a wolf in sheep's clothing. And Bhagavatam is saying, a hunter in deer's clothing. So Indra is pretending to be a friend, and his idea is murder. Why wouldn't Diti have guessed? Well, you know, Indra's her nephew and stepson. So it might be just very... They're a family. Remember, this is a family. So she might not have thought anything of it, that her nephew and stepson is serving her when she's pregnant. It just... And helping her do a vow. I mean, after all, her vow is including the worship of Lakshmi and Ryan. Indra's a devotee. The Lord.
Well,
she might not have thought it was surprising. In fact, perhaps she thought, he doesn't know. He's serving me. And he doesn't know that by serving me, he's facilitating my killing him. My guess is that Indra serving her also softened her heart towards him. Because naturally when people serve us, as we said before, we feel inclined to them. It's just natural. But he's devious. It says he was a kavi, a wise person. So he thought that he would serve her. And he brought items for worship at the proper time. Text 57. And he apparently is facilitating the worship. Any thoughts about proper time? About this concept of proper time. Do we have concepts of proper time in worship?
Yes,
very much so. So we have proper time in terms of chanting Gayatri, we have proper time in terms of the arati ceremony. Prabhupada said one of the main elements of deity worship is punctuality. Proper time is important, and one of the factors that makes charity in the mode of ignorance is if it's given at the wrong time. So if you give to the right person with the right motive for the right cause, but you give it at the wrong time, it becomes in the mode of ignorance. You know, you go to somebody at 2 in the morning and wake them up. Hi, can I give you a donation? You know, or they're in the toilet, or... You try to hand somebody a donation when they're on the toilet. It becomes in the mode of ignorance. It's at the wrong time. Right? So proper time is significant. Indra is feeling what? 59. What's his emotion?
Anxiety.
So same topic we talked about yesterday with Diti's fear and grief. Now Indra is being controlled by anxiety. He has fear. So these are all about people who are being controlled by their emotions. So I find in 60, You were asking on the break about rules for pregnant women, and I find it interesting that DT is so weak. You know, this doesn't make sense to me.
Weak.
Weak, W-E-A-K.
She's feeling weak.
Yeah, she's pregnant. Why would her husband give her a vow to do during pregnancy that would make her weak? So this, I mean, pregnant women are often tired. And it's normal for pregnant women to be tired and thus somewhat forgetful. But it's not mentioned here that she's tired and forgetful because she's pregnant. I mean, well, of course, what it just says here, it says from the vow, Ratya Karshita, she was weak and thin from the vow. So this again confuses me. Why would she be given a vow to do during pregnancy that would make her weak? Generally, if a woman's pregnant, you want her to be healthy. So I just will say, I don't have, there's no purport, there's no commentaries. I just find this confusing. Again, I can understand that she's tired because she's pregnant, but I don't understand why she would be tired from the vow itself. Unless she's just tired because she's pregnant and doing being so careful about the vow also is kind of like a little much for her. So she just crashes. Like you say, I crashed, I passed out. She just crashes. She's exhausted. You ever been so tired that you just crash?
Yes.
You don't even brush your teeth? You ever done that? You're just so tired, you don't brush your teeth, you don't do anything. You just lie in the bed and fall asleep. You know, change your clothes, nothing, just like crash. So that's what DT did. She didn't do what she was supposed to do. She fell asleep at the wrong time. She slept during the sandhya, and she didn't clean herself first. So I think we've all done that kind of thing, right? So then Indra saw that there was a fault, and he took advantage of this. And then he has mystic powers. Yes, here he has this anima, that he became very small. So who has all the mystic powers perfectly?
Krishna.
Krishna, who's called Yogeshwar. So who else has these mystic powers?
Hanuman.
Kardama Muni. Oh, yes. But I thought you said Hanuman, but him too.
Siddha.
All the residents of Siddha Loka, they all have these powers.
Even
Durvasa Muni, yeah. Who else?
Even Shukracharya became
small. Shukracharya, yeah. Sahadev had some mystic powers, yes. Actually, do we all have the potential for mystic power?
Yeah.
Yes. All of us have the potential for mystic power, but and the Earth planet in Kali Yuga, it's hard to access those powers. It's hard to get to them. Why? Why is it so hard for us to find these powers that we have? Not cannot, but it's very difficult. There are people on this planet who have mystic powers.
People who control their senses get mystic powers?
Yes. The people control their mind and their senses, they will get mystic powers, particularly the mind. The 11th canto describes how, yeah, you're all for it, huh? That's mystic powers, King Jai. See a couple of really enthusiastic devotees over there. So, we were talking last class about we've all been men and women in different lives. You know what? We've all been great mystics in different lives too. Just to let you know that. We've definitely lived on Siddhaloka and had all... The residents of Siddhaloka don't even have to do a yogic process. They're born with mystic powers. Wow, right? You want to go there? Ready for that one, right? Okay. We've all been there. We remember that at some level. You know, Prabhupada says that if we have dreams of flying, if we all had dreams where we could fly,
yes.
I had dreams where I could fly. He said we're remembering those lifetimes. You were asking how much we remember. Somewhere. It says the fortunate soul in the womb remembers the last 100 births and grieves, cries. So yeah, the residents of Siddhaloka, they don't even have to do yoga. They naturally have, of course, everyone in Vaikuntha has all mystic powers. They're not really mystic to them. But it's very difficult in Kali Yuga to control the mind to that extent. Very, very hard. But yeah, there are definitely people who have mystic powers. If you want to read about an interesting person with one of the mystic powers, two maybe, you can read about Wolf Messing, if you're interested. Wolf Messing was he was a Jew in Germany when Hitler came to power. And as a young man, he found that he could go into what's called a cataleptic trance for 3 days at a time, where his body became completely stiff and he hardly breathed. He didn't have to eat or drink or anything for 3 days. At one point he visited India and he met yogis who could go into a cataleptic trance for 3 weeks. But he could do it for 3 days, just naturally, without any kind of yogic training. And he used to make his money, the way he would make his money, was he worked for a wax museum.
Wax.
Wax. W-A-X. He worked for a wax museum, and he would go into a cataleptic trance over the weekend, and they would display him as a wax figure. And that was how he earned his living.
By being a so-called wax figure.
Correct. So, I'm pretty sure that he came to the notice of Hitler. And he was worried, because he was from a Jewish family, so he was worried that he was going to be killed. So he left Germany and he went to Russia. That, you know, Germany and Russia were enemies. And he used to then make a living by doing magic performances, but they were really magic. They weren't tricks. And mostly what he would do was read people's minds, but he could actually read people's minds. And he could control people's minds. That's one of the mystic powers, to be able to control others' minds. So that was what he did, but he did it as if he was a magician. And at one point, Stalin heard about him and decided that maybe he could use Wolf Messing for military purposes. So he tested Wolf. He said, I want you to go into that bank and steal 100,000 rubles. So Wolf Messing handed the person at the bank a sheet of blank paper and told the man mentally, that is a note from the bank president telling you to give me 100,000 rubles. And so the bank teller just handed him 100,000 rubles from a blank piece of paper. One time Stalin tested him. Stalin had a retreat where he would go to relax, but it was very fortified. And Stalin said, I want you to get out of there. He brought him in, and everybody knew what Wolf Messing looked like. He was friendly with Stalin's. Everybody knew what he looked like, and of course they knew what Stalin looked like. So Stalin and Wolf Messing went into the inner quarters, and Stalin said, I want you to get out. on your own, and he told all of the guards at all the different levels, do not let Wolf Messing out. So Wolf Messing immediately got out. He sent a mental message to everyone telling them he was someone else. He told them he was the head of the Secret Service, whatever his name was. You know? It's like if I were to say to you, I am Prasanta, I am Prasanta, I am Prasanta. And they all thought he was this other person, so they let him out. Now, some interesting stories with him. He was a very interesting character. He never really did anything particularly interesting with his powers. He basically just made his money as a magician and mind reader. He never did anything of particular note with it.
His name
was Wolf Messing. Wolf. Very interesting person. I found him interesting because he was born with these powers. He didn't do anything to develop them. And he was a very ordinary person. He wasn't a particularly pious or impious person. Just a completely ordinary person. And he didn't do anything special with his powers. He didn't misuse them, but he didn't particularly use them either. So he just didn't do much with them. He just worked as a magician. And as a wax dummy, that was it. So there are people, I tell this story just that there are people, even on this planet, who have mystic powers. Some of them, life wolf messing, are born with them. And of course there's that other, was it Uri Geller, who could bend spoons with his mind? You know, so there are people who have these various powers. And of course there are also people who develop powers by some sort of yogic process. You know, some of them can make ashes come out of their hand or something, like some fascinating, useless thing. And Srila Prabhupada talked about that when he was young, that his father would always have guests coming. He said there were never less than 4 guests in his father's house, and that his father would usually invite sadhus, but his father didn't discriminate very much about what sadhus he would invite. So anyone who looked like a sadhu, he would invite them. And this practice of his father made Srila Prabhupada very skeptical about sadhus, because many of these apparent sadhus that his father invited were not genuine. And so therefore, when Prabhupada was invited to see Bhaktisiddhanta, he was very skeptical, he was very hesitant to go. But Srila Prabhupada told that one of these apparent sadhus or yogis that his father invited was able to produce mangoes in his hand, even though it wasn't mango season. So he came to visit and, you know, okay, I'd like to give you a gift. Would you like to give a gift of mangoes? And Prabhupada just reached out his hand and there was a mango in his hand, even though it was not mango season in India. So Prabhupada had some personal experience. And sometimes I wonder if some of the leading magicians in the world today are actually doing, you know, some sort, if some of them have some mystic power and they just, you know, use it like Wolf Messing for some cheap magic. So there are and there's a description when you, those of you who study Bhaktivedanta, there's a description in the 11th canto of many more than 8 mystic powers. And what is the process for getting them? So if you really are interested, you can check that out. The chances of developing mystic power in Kali Yuga by yoga is very small. So, you know, most likely you'll spend 20 or 30 years at it and you won't get anything. So that's, therefore, it's not advised. But the other thing is that mystic powers are a distraction. So each of the forms of yoga has a distraction. And if you want to read more about it, you can read Essence Seekers, because we talk about it there. It's my book. My novel, so. When the characters get to acumen, they get in touch with all the forms of yoga, and they find the obstacles in each of the four kinds. And that's coming from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 20. Okay, so Indra has this mystic power, and of course people are very anxious to get mystic power, yeah? Oh, I should tell you one other thing about mystic power. So, you know how Aditi has those earrings that Vanasura took, and that Krishna had this battle to get the earrings? Does it make much sense that you would, like, go kill someone and have a battle to get earrings? No. So these are not ordinary, it's not ordinary things. One devotee was explaining to me, it's like our mobile phones. You know, we have objects that give us power. Do our mobile phones give us power? We have property city through our mobile phones. We do. I can just click two or three buttons on my mobile phone, and in one day a package will show up at my door. That's property city. And if we're going to talk about like an electronic book, I can click a button on my phone and that book ends up on my phone immediately. The first time I did that, I was so thrilled that I wanted to buy another book just to see it happen again. You just click a button and then you got a book. It was kind of addictive. So this is, it's property city, isn't it? And I think it's a city that you just touch a button on your machine and you can speak to someone in another part of the world. You have a video conversation with someone in another part of the world. I mean, maybe those of you who are very young don't think that that's anything extraordinary, but for me, that's kind of amazing. I mean, they just invented television when I was a child. So this idea that you have this little thing in your pocket that you can talk to somebody in New Zealand, you know, by pushing a button. So we have these gadgets that give us mystic powers. And so do the demigods. So the demigods, they don't have all their powers in their own body. Some of their powers are in their paraphernalia. They have weapons and paraphernalia that they're able to infuse with various powers. All right. And yeah, everybody wants these powers. Who doesn't want these powers? You know, only the devotees who are satisfied with loving Krishna, they don't really care. Even though they have these powers, it doesn't matter to them. They're not trying to be the controllers of the universe. So it doesn't interest them. Yes?
Like Bharat Maharaj,
Rishabh
did manifest all the parts, but he didn't.
He didn't display them. And the reason given was, you know, if you capture a wild animal, you don't trust it. So once you, in order to get these powers, you have to control the mind. But if you use these powers, you run the risk that you'll lose control over your mind. That again, you get under the control of lust and pride and so forth. So here Indra's using these powers for his own selfish purposes. And he goes into the womb and he cuts the baby up into seven pieces. And it's said that they appeared like glowing gold. So before he cut up the baby, it looked like the glowing gold. So he might have already thought, this baby looks really effulgent. Maybe I don't have to be scared of the baby. But he didn't really think about it, kind of like Kamsa with the baby girl. And then they start crying. And Indra says, don't cry. He cuts each of them into seven pieces again. That's terrible. That's terrible. Don't cry while I kill you. All right. So then you had 49 babies, and then they said, we are your brothers. And then Lord Indra's like, okay, if you're my brothers, then that's good. So what is that all about? If you're my brothers, that's all right. You're not my brothers, I'm going to kill you.
Well, that surprised me. Because he already knew they were his brothers.
Well, they were his brothers in terms of the family. So when they said, we're your brothers, what did they mean?
That they were keen to
eat. You mean you no harm?
Hmm?
They don't mean harm to you.
Well, I don't mean harm to you.
No, but he was able to say that because he felt them liking him.
Yes.
Keen to eat.
So usually if we say, you know, we're brothers and sisters, the meaning is we're all on the same team. When we talk about universal brotherhood, we don't mean sibling rivalry or civil wars. We mean a sense of being on the same team. Yeah? I'm just remembering Nisingananda put together a video of, at that time, all the places in the movies that mentioned Hare Krishna. He called it Hare Krishna in the movies. I'm sure Nisingananda of ITV. I'm sure there's many more now. That was done a long time ago. Anyway, in one of these movies, it showed a devotee in the airport selling Prabhupada's books. And the way they showed it in the movie is a devotee walks up to this guy and says, "Hey, brother, take a look at this book." And then the other guy says, "You're not my brother." And the devotee says, "We're all brothers." And the guy said, "Look, I had a brother. He slept in my room." So in one sense, the Marus are brothers. They share the same father as Indra. But what they meant was, we're your friends. We're on the same team. Then he said, "Okay, you have nothing to fear from me. If you're all my brothers, you have nothing more to fear from me." So this is this whole concept of friends and enemies. This whole concept of friends and enemies. And we're leading here into the seventh canto. We're just about finished with the sixth canto. We're leading into the seventh canto, which starts off with the question of, is God partial? Okay, let me see, I need to do something active. Okay, Sukadeva Goswami says, you shouldn't be surprised because Brickett had been surprised. How is it the Maruts became demigods? He said, you shouldn't be surprised. He said, if you worship the Lord just once, you can get Swarupya Mukti. Why should you be surprised that Diti worshipped the Lord for a year and her children became demigods? Okay, now something really astonishing is happening here. Can we like really pay attention to this, because this is quite astonishing. Let's look at text 69. What's happening here?
Diti was completely purified because of worshiping.
That'd be very specific. 69, what happens here?
Oh, 69. She reveals her heart to...
What does she say?
That I wanted to kill 12 of your
adults. So not only that I want to kill you, I wanted to kill
all
12 of Aditi's children. Whoa! Okay, now what? Look at text 71. Maybe 71, 72, 73, all this that Indra's speaking.
All the sons of her sister.
So what's Indra doing here?
He's only, he did what Diti was thinking. Diti was just in the heart, but Indra was already in action.
Well, she wasn't just thinking, she made a plan. But so Indra also said what?
What he did.
What he did.
They revealed each other's,
yes,
intentions.
So they're being honest here, right?
Yes.
Do you think that's easy to be honest like that?
No.
I'd like us to think back to the last time that we were caught doing something wrong. If somebody caught us doing something wrong, how easy was it to admit what we were doing wrong? Were we completely honest? Or did we say, well, it wasn't really like that, Prabhu. I mean, I was just trying to do this and this and this. I wasn't really doing, I mean, I know it looked like that, but that wasn't really what I was doing. So both DT and Inder are completely honest. Why is this especially amazing about DT and Inder in this story?
So they're trying to kill each other.
Not only that.
They're purified.
Yes, but what did Inder do and what did DT do that makes this honesty really, really surprising? And they were being what? What makes it surprising?
Which verse?
Seriously?
Yeah. Were trying to please each other.
Were they actually trying to please each other?
Deceitfully.
Okay, what was the word? Say it again, louder.
Deceitfully.
Who was deceitful?
Both
of them. What are they being now?
Honest.
Honest. And they're being honest about what?
Their fault.
Their own fault. Do you think this is a serious fault that they're admitting to?
Very serious.
By the way, I wanted to kill you. Oh yeah, well, I wanted to kill your kid. Do we experience in life that deceitful people become dishonest? Is that common? Not at all. Amazing. They went from being very deceitful to being completely honest. And admitting a very serious fault of behavior and character. That's nothing short of astonishing. Alright? And then they were enemies. And now they're friends. Now they're all buddies. Indra's good friends with the Maruts. Going to take them to heaven, and they're his friends. He's good friends with Diti. She's good friends with him. They're all friends.
Well, because Diti followed the path of worshiping the Supreme
Lord. Yes. And Diti, how did Diti feel when she saw her sons being friendly with Indra? She was very pleased. Text 77. She was very pleased.
So Diti became purified because she followed that vow. How did Indra become purified? Because he served her and was a part of before?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was a part of the...
Yes. He got tricked also, didn't he?
Yeah.
He kind of very much actually.
So, you have enemies become friends, and deceitful people become honest to this extent, to the extent of admitting their own faults. Who does Indra give credit to?
Supreme Lord.
To the Supreme Lord. To the Supreme Lord. All right. And their bodies became purified. Right? The Marids have this gold body. They all became very purified. Who do you think was really happy about this?
Kasyapa.
Whoa! I mean, I'm sure the Lord was also very happy, but I think the main person here who was happy was Kasyapa. Finally, my family's getting along. I wouldn't like to have his job. Would you like to have his job? Isn't one of his wives the mother of Garuda and one of his wives the mother of Tarsha? Yeah, he's really got a situation there, doesn't he? He must be a very great personality. That. And he can balance these things. And you know, Kasyapa must be to some extent manifesting the qualities of the Lord, that he loves all of his children. So the mothers seem to have a problem. Garuda's mother and Vasuki's mother have a problem. And Indra's mother and Hiranyakashipu's mother have a problem. But Kasyapa loves all of his children. Just like the Lord. All right. So, we're looking at these two big things. Right? Enemies. And deceivers. And then become friends, genuine friends. They become truthful and humble. So I want to know how this works. How does doing bhakti create this? All right, now we had this before, right? With the thing with Chitra Ketu, what was our flow chart? And all of you wrote the externals of the process. Okay, that's fine. Can we go do now the internals? Because all of you on your flow charts, you wrote, I mean, this had a little bit of the internals, but you're basically just writing what Chitra Ketu did. This is what he did, and just kind of poof. It led to the next thing, and poof, it led to the next thing. And it was good. It was good, and I'm sure you'd get an A-plus on your exam for that. I was looking at it, and I thought, should I push them to go deeper? And I thought, they'll pass the exam with that answer. And I don't want them to think that I'm just torturing them. But I'm going to torture you now. Basically because it's 3:30 in the afternoon and I'm losing some of you. And I would really like us to a flow chart. And if you can get into two teams here and see if you can find a configuration you haven't had before. That's possible. We have a new gentleman here. We lost one and gained one. So if you can find two people you haven't worked with before, and if you can find two people, but maybe go in a particular three configurations.
We have done every option.
Yeah. I'd like you to do this on the more of the subtle level, the more level of heart. How is it we already talked about this a little bit this morning? One of you has a group of two, one of you has a group of three. Try to have a configuration you haven't done before. We already talked a little bit this morning of how is it that bhakti
changes.
When we asked about Kasyapa, and we asked why Kasyapa chose Bhakti to change Diti, so we already brought up about three things. Let's see if you can have a flow chart here, and particularly if we want to look at these two things. How does Bhakti turn friends into enemies and deceivers into truthful, humble people? Give us a flow chart. But want to look at heart stuff. Want to look at heart and subtle stuff. Don't just tell me they worship the Lord and then poof, it happens. That's what you guys told me before. I wasn't happy with it. All right. Let's do this one first. They did two of them. One for enemies and one for deceivers. Couldn't combine them, huh? Okay. Okay.
Okay, let's look at the one on the left side. It's the main one which we start. First, there is some acknowledgement here that we realize something is wrong or something.
Okay.
We adjust it. Then the insight that actually by maintaining enmity or deceitful behavior, actually I harm others and also myself. It's actually also not good for me. Developing an understanding that actually the other person is also part of God, and I'm part of God, so there is a connection between us as the equal, we see equal vision. Then regretting that one did something wrong, and then also having the desire to change. And with that desire to change, one starts to see good qualities in the other person also. Then one has some affection, so appreciation to the other person, and also then.
This is the same as that, it's just different words. We deceivers, we realize that we imagine, because often if you're deceiving others, you're deceiving yourself as well. So you realize actually, yes, I'm deceiving myself and others. So we start to regret that that's a change, start to change in mind. Then we let go of the pride of thinking, you know, letting go of that pride. Then openly admitting that, being able to come into a point in your heart where you're actually able to openly admit, yeah, actually I have to lie or I was deceptive.
What is the difference between realization and openly admit?
Yeah, we
tell it to others or what?
Yes, we're openly admitting. Yes, it's we're prepared to openly admit to other people. Not just ourselves. Because that's more difficult.
Yeah.
Repentance, well, maybe that's actually just a repetition of this. And then publicly admitting that we were wrong, which is difficult to do, therefore we come to this point of truthfulness.
It seems like it's something happening two or three times at deeper levels each time.
Yes.
It's at least two.
Realization,
openly admitting fault, regret and repentance, letting go of pride and admission have some parallelism. And it looks like you're identifying a process that basically repeats but then at a deeper level.
Yeah.
And how is it that it's that Bhakti does this? What is the action of Bhakti that sets this thing in motion and gives it fuel as it progresses? I'm asking them. It's their chart. I'll ask you for your chart. Them for their chart.
Connection with
First of all, knowledge. Starting through Bhakti, hearing, we hear that actually it doesn't please Krishna that we hold enmity towards others, we deceive others. And therefore, we realize actually we've got to change. And then the process of engaging in devotional service gradually purifies the heart of the attachment. Because, we're often attached to having an enemy. So we lose that attachment, realizing it's useless. And therefore, we can develop equal vision and the desire to change. And gradually develop, realizing that in the equal vision, realizing that we're all part and parcel of God, and there's no point in actually holding on to enmity. So therefore, we gradually develop affection, and then we start to express it, actually to do something, cultivate the more positive relationship or friendship.
Okay. Okay, let's do this one.
Hare Krishna, we explain about the contest. The son Diti as enemy, Diti wanted see his children has been killed. There are just one reaction. So, my Lord Vishnu, she was having a plan to kill Lord Indra also. Because of Indra, his two children were killed. So he was having a plan. Did he also wanted to take revenge? And secretly, she planned to kill Indra. She pleased her husband by being very subject, her husband, and serving Lord Vishnu and keeping to vows. So she was following his vows. And in the procedure, she made a mistake. She slept at twilight.
Okay, so you made a progression of the plot.
Yeah.
So that wasn't what I wanted. I mean, it's lovely, a progression, but that wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking for, how did the process of bhakti, what were the steps by which doing bhakti changed enemies into friends and deceivers into truthful people? What happens internally, not what do people do, but what are the internal changes in consciousness that happen that are seen in this lila, but could happen anywhere? So that could happen with any enemies or any deceitful persons, that if they do bhakti, they're going to go through these internal steps that will take them, because it's not that you're enemies and then you chant Hare Krishna and then, oh, I love everybody and I'm going to be truthful. What happens? What's the progression? So you did a beautiful progression of the plot of the stories, which is very useful and very helpful, but it wasn't, maybe I just didn't explain it very well, what I was looking for. So, did you have anything here about psychologically or conscious, on the consciousness or psychological level, on the heart level, what's happening? Because here you just seem to be talking about what they do. But what changed inside of them? And why did bhakti do that? Yeah?
When we watch in the Kirtan, yasya asti bhakti bhakti yogincana sarve gun tatra samasthe sura. All the quantity of demigod are manifested in a person who do this unalloyed devotion service. So because she did that, and so all the qualities.
Okay. Thank you. Yes.
sorry, I was not covered totally. So when I came, I saw that. In this chapter, when Diti is asking Indra, so Indra is very politely, he is explaining. So he accepts his mistakes, so that it makes the heart turning into enmity to friendship. And
well, but it happens if you see the progression here. Diti explains hers first. She first says, well, she sees that they're all friends. She was sleeping. This all happened when she was sleeping. So she wakes up and she sees that she's given birth to 49 beautiful children who are all Indra's friends. And then she's like, what's going on? I was trying to have a child who would kill you. In fact, I not only wanted to kill you, I wanted to kill you and your 11 siblings. So she starts out by being honest about what she was doing as soon as she sees these children. And then from her being honest, which Indra already knew that, at least Indra already knew that she wanted to kill him. We don't know if he knew that she wanted to kill all of them. Then he becomes honest. But their ability to be honest comes from bhakti. I mean, Indra gives the credit to bhakti. So I'm asking how. How does that work? I mean, if we're going to go to the world, which is full of enemies, am I correct?
Yes.
And it's full of deceitful people, am I correct?
Yes.
If we're going to go to the world, and we're just going to say, like this beautiful verse you quoted, if you do bhakti, you will get all good qualities. Do you think that that would convince people?
No.
No. I don't think so. So you can tell this story. Here's an example. But people would want to know, how does it work? How does it work? What happens with bhakti that changes enemies into friends and deceitful people into people who are so honest that they admit that they intended to be murderers? Even most murderers, they don't admit that they're murderers. Most murderers say they're innocent until the day they're executed. So how does bhakti do this? What's the process? Is it just kind of magic? You go in one side of the box, enmity-filled, deceitful person, and bhakti happens. Bhakti happens. And then you come out the other side of the box and your friend, your a truthful friend. What's happening inside that black box? So that's the question I'm asking here. What's this mystery? We did touch on this also this morning when we were asking why Kasyapa chose bhakti as the process. And I think three different answers were given. All right, let's take one of these.
Okay, I think we did it separately because as I understand, and you were saying this maybe yesterday, that fear is the basis of material life. And when we come to Krishna consciousness, we change our identity and we become fearless as humans.
Mm.
So first we have fear, it transferred to anger, what was happened when we considered someone's enemy. Then when we touch with bhakti, we
fearfulness. Fearlessness, I think, is what you meant.
I'm sorry for my English.
That's no problem.
Sometimes, as Mataji was saying, it happens when we see someone's open protection. For example, Indra saw that his stepmother is honest in front of him, so he also changed. And Diti, by performing this vows, she saw some. She saw God as a protector. Then it turns to trust and warm feelings, which experience by friends.
And I really like this. This is actually exactly the kind of thing that I was looking for. Because here we have both Diti and Indra were afraid. Their anger, Diti's anger and grief, comes from her fear that what's happening to my family, my children are all being killed, I'm not going to have any family anymore. And this leads to her anger. But by serving the Lord, one becomes fearless because, yes, one's identity changes. But here, you mentioned that, but you particularly said by seeing someone's love and protection. When we serve the Lord, we feel the protection of the Lord. Now, this is not the only answer, but it is certainly one answer. That we feel that the Lord is protecting us, and therefore we become fearless. It's fine, whatever they want to do, let them just do whatever they want. So we become fearless, and once we're fearless, then we're able to have loving feelings for others because they're no longer a threat. Okay, and what's your next one about deceivers?
Deceivers, basically it's Maxaria. I use this word because it completely shows what this means. Maxaria, not like I'm angry with someone, but envy and I want to harm someone.
Yes.
This is the meaning of Maxaria. This shows us hypocrisy. And when we come in touch with Bhakti, of course, Maxaria turns to opposite. We want to serve. We don't want to fight with another person.
Why? You got us in the black box again. Why does Bhakti take me from wanting to hurt people to wanting to serve people?
Because you're changing identity.
Okay. And when I change my identity, take it another step. What happens when I change my identity?
Truthfulness.
You were in her group?
I thought you were asking.
No, I'm asking this group. What happens when you change your identity?
I consider myself as a servant of the Lord, and the others is my brothers and sisters.
Okay. Very much like this equal vision they were talking about. Okay, yes?
Then it leads to simplicity, service mood, service attitude, and usefulness.
Okay, very nice. Very nice, thank you. Okay, let's take now this group. And now, Mahalakshmi, you are welcome to explain everything about your own chart. You come and you've been dying to explain everybody else's, so at least you can come and explain.
They're nice explanations.
They are nice.
To understand something, but she was the artist.
Actually, she has something also.
Did you have something else you wanted to add?
It's okay,
yes, she
no, it's right.
Something different than me.
Is there something else you want to add? Please add it.
Yes.
Just wait a second, Mahalakshmi. She wants to add something. We're doing fine with time. Our time is fine.
So, if somebody is envious to someone, so they are always fearful because they think maybe I will lose my post or I should have more than her or his.
Yes.
So then people get anger, and then after anger they get envious to others. So if you said we have to define between these two.
Yeah.
So if as someone I think is a someone enemy, then I can make that person friend by giving love, by giving some service, and so many things. And the next one is the deceiver and truthfulness. So this one is somebody's not faithful person, not honest person, so not serving to their superior and not following the principles. So in order to they are showing something inside, but they are diplomatic inside, but outside they are showing to their boss we are very good, we do the job very well. But in order to submit themselves to their boss, they can be honestly serviced when they understand their fault.
Mm.
So they can give more respect, they can give love.
Very nice. Thank you. I'm glad you came and added that. Thank you. We're fine with the time. Okay, yes.
Okay, so here we might be, or we may not, already in the process of the emotional service, but a person who is an enemy has envy in their heart. So, because contemplating and thinking about others and finding faults in others, this envy brings all these emotions. And we have bodily and mental situations that bring us anger, greed, lamentation, seeing things for what they are not. And then this person wants to start planning to execute something to harm that person because finding fault and then attack. So emotionally and physically and even verbally, that's a transformation in the person who is contemplating others with envy, envious attitude, the attitude of an enemy. Then comes a clear vision how to break their plan, how to harm them. And we criticize and we want to damage. This is an enemy. Maybe in the process of backing or maybe not, but the person when what is the key? What is the trigger that changed that chain of action and thoughts? So it becomes by doing service. We associate with the devotees, eat prasadam and chant. So this is Vajrayana Kriya, which sustains the heart. All these activities, the association of devotees and chanting. Then this practice of association and eating Krishna's prasad brings revelations within the heart. Becomes the faith becomes firm. And we have the instructions of the spiritual master and our firm becomes stronger. And this transforms the heart. The transformation starts. Because by this service and attitude and association and following the instructions of the spiritual master, some revelations start and faith becomes stronger. So the transformation of the heart comes. And this transformation of the heart, which is anartha nivritti, these clouds in the heart become cleansed. Heart clears up. And then the vision clears up. And then when the clear vision comes, then we can see things for what they are, truth. And this seeing things for what they are, this truthful attitude, brings a proper attitude and humility. And this makes enemies become friends and deceivers become truthful.
Okay, thank you very much. That was lovely. Thank you. Give everybody here a big hand. So give yourself a big hand. All right. So tomorrow morning we're going to be going over the details of the plan, which is finishing the sixth canto. So we had already Kasyapa giving some of the details, which we wrote down right in the mind, body, and worship, which we did this morning. And here we see how the plan works. And so naturally, Amar Prakrit, after hearing about how effective this plan was for DT, and to some extent for Indra, he was interested in finding out the details of the plan. And so that's what's going to be tomorrow morning. So if anybody wants to follow this, all the instructions are there. There's a few things here. I'm trying to think of just a couple small things. I like that Sukadev Goswami related the situation to Parikit's own experience. He said, hey, you were in the womb and you got saved. So it's always useful as a teacher to relate what you're teaching to the experiences of your students. You know, something in their experiences. And of course, the better you know them, the more that you can do that. And then there's quite a bit in this chapter about how if we serve the Lord with material desires, that very service takes away our material desires. And it's sort of astonishing that if we serve the Lord for a material purpose, we will lose that material purpose in the course of our service. This is something that's repeated over and over and over and over again. That if we shouldn't be afraid or ashamed or distressed about the fact that we have material desires in our service, but rather we should be confident that if on some level, in some way, we want prema bhakti, that Krishna will give us that and remove these other impediments. We don't have to pretend that we're more pure than we are. We don't have to go to Krishna and say, please give me pure bhakti, and I'm not going to tell you about what I really want, as if he doesn't already know. We don't have to pretend to all the other devotees. We don't have to pretend to ourselves. We can be honest about who we are and at the same time say, but you know, I want at least at some point to want pure bhakti. And know that even people who worship the Lord without thinking like that become purified. Diti was not thinking like that. Dhruva was not thinking like that. They were just thinking, I want this thing. And they became purified. What to speak of somebody like all of us? On some level, we want pure bhakti. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
At least intellectually.
Yes.
At least we're convinced in theory and intellectually, pure devotional service sounds really good. I know that if I could have that, I'd be fully satisfied. Do we all agree with that? At least on some level of faith. We might not feel that way 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but it is a genuine feeling. So even if we also sometimes go to the Lord and say, my dear Lord, I need money, or my dear Lord, I'd like my stomach to stop hurting, or my dear Lord, please, I'd like a nice wife, or whatever it is that we have, you know, I want a new dhoti, I don't know, whatever we go to the Lord for, you know, that's okay. These stories are here in the Bhagavatam over and over and over and over and over again. The evidence of pure devotional service is that you no longer want anything from the Lord. That's an evidence of perfection. It's not something to be falsely imitated. It's a symptom of perfection. And for something to be considered pure bhakti in an immature stage, it means that at least I have that as a goal. Not that I'm faking, not that I'm a pretender. I just want pure bhakti, when that's not true. It's such a significant thing, it comes up all the time. And there was a particular verse here, somehow I can't find it, which is really bugging me, because I wrote it down. And, oh well. All right, well, we do have this verse 74. Relating to Dhruva. And Prabhupada's again quoting Akama Sarvakamava Moksha Kama Udaraji Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. Whether he's full of material desires, free from material, desiring liberation, worship the Lord. That even though he has no desires, whatever desires he previously had can all be fulfilled. The actual devotee does not desire even liberation. The Lord, however, fulfills the desire of the devotee by awarding an opulence that will never be destroyed. The karma's opulence is destroyed, but the opulence of a devotee is never destroyed. A devotee becomes more and more opulent as he increases, 74, as he increases his devotional service to Lord. So this is also one of those just astonishing things that, you know, I believe that when we have this faith, that if I only desire Krishna, I will be satisfied. I don't have to hold on to these other things. I will be satisfied. And then Krishna may even give you all those other things. Isn't that funny, you know? Have we seen that in our own lives? That it's often the desires we let go of that Krishna fulfills, and the ones we hold on to desperately that he's like, nope, 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 nope. And the ones we're like, yeah, Krishna, I'd like that, but you know, whatever. And then we forget about it. And maybe in an hour, Krishna's like, here you go. Yes? Generally.
That's a problem. Sometimes devotees don't.
Well, sometimes you shouldn't. Sometimes it's a test. But the answer is generally. Just like when Devahuti came to Kardama, and it was saying that if you don't accept things that come of their own accord, later you'll be a beggar for the very same things. So generally, yes. But sometimes, no.
What, an example?
You know, Dhruva didn't really accept this concept that his stepmother and stepbrother were going to die. He didn't, I mean, it happened, but he didn't celebrate that. And in fact, not only did he not celebrate that, but he was out there defending his brother. So I'd say that's something that he did not accept. That Vishnu said, okay, you wanted revenge. I mean, Diti wanted revenge. You wanted revenge, you can have it. And Dhruva basically rejected it.
He was killing everyone.
Yeah, he rejected it. But he rejected even the mood of vengeance. He just rejected it. There's also like with Muchakunda, where Krishna said you can have whatever you want, and Muchakunda said, no. Of course, that wasn't something that came, but he just said no. He said, and then Krishna said, you passed my test, that you didn't ask for anything. But generally, no. Generally, if the Lord gives us something, if we know it's coming from the Lord, generally.
How do you know when the Lord wants you to reject it and wants to accept?
How will it affect your relationship with him? How will it affect your relationship with him?
So if I accept it, it would change my relationship with the Lord.
Then I reject it.
But if you just...
But sometimes Krishna insists. He's like, no, I want you to be king, and I want you, but I don't want him anymore. Oh well, I want you to be king. Sometimes he insists. He's like, no, this is also my desire. All right, so you guys are almost finished with Bhakti Vaibhava. One more class.